This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. This kid really kicks.
Our next guest is the true definition of the word multi-talented. Her journey to stardom was seemingly written in the stars, and it was clear that she was destined for stardom from a very young age. She credits her family and friends as having played a significant role in shaping her career. As an award-winning actress, you may have been introduced to her recently as Ndoni Tembe, the deeply troubled butt-kicking private security guard in the Showmax drama Empini, or as Imkita in the hit drama romance movie Happiness Ever After. You may also know her from Queen Bee, Beyoncé's futuristic visual album, Black is King. Should I carry on? I will carry on. I also feel like I need to watch my words and behave to avoid possibly having my ass kicked, because she's also a Muay Thai fighter, which makes her a savage beauty. Please give a wild welcome to Nambita Ben Mazwi.
Okay, copywriter, who did that? That was amazing.
You
thank
savage
you.
Beauty, you.
Kick ass, because she's a savage beauty. I'm taking that, I'm rolling with
you
it.
You can have it, dog.
I get some dust. How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm excited to be here, man, finally.
I'm allowed to call you Nampo.
No, Nako. Yeah, one
is it Nako?
Like Google as
is it Nako?
Nako, yes.
And how do we get
who
to Nako?
Who told you that? Guys, your research team, where they at? I'm like, where's the producer? But yes, it's Nako. Yo.
And how did we get to Nako?
You know what? You know, at home, yeah. Family nicknames.
Sure.
I still don't know Ivelapi. Like, it literally was just, I was born, there was Nam Nam, but I was Nako.
Sure.
Since a young child. I don't know where it originates from.
In fact, your family had a get-together a couple of weeks ago. And,
yes.
And the thing is, I'm big on family. So,
yes,
for instance, we were unveiling my great aunt's tombstone this past weekend.
Yes, I remember.
And it's always incredible just when you see people have grown up, people have a beard all of a sudden, you're like, oh, flip. This is my baby cousin who's now telling me meet my fiance.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about the meeting you guys had just the other day.
So that was my brother's one, which if it's my siblings, it's ours.
Okay, so it's a housewarming.
Like yes, okay. So it was a traditional housewarming. I actually later found out that it's more of a closer thing because
okay.
A lot of, you know, other tribes, unless you can educate me, maybe if you guys do it, but for us, it's quite...
Sure,
you know
sure.
What I mean? So it's just really getting the kraal identified in your household so that all the other ancestral, you know, works that you're going to have, you can now host them,
sure.
You know? So it's just also for your ancestors to know
we're
where
here.
You live.
We're
we are here. Sisa Cecile.
Sure.
And here is the ancestral kraal, and we've identified it. So, you know, we're very close as a family. So if it's like my brother's wedding, it was also ours. Like
sure.
We, even my dad was like, if you, to my sister and I, if you guys mess this one up, it's on you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes,
like,
yes, yes.
So it was my brother's, but again, it was ngumsebenzi wasekhaya, you know? So we have an organizing committee which consists of my sister and I and my brother and our parents. And yeah, that was the get-together, I guess.
Now, you've had quite a journey.
Mm.
And I'm mentioning this because I want to see if family changes and how they relate to you.
Mm.
You know, from student to varsity chick, to corporate chick, to actress, to public figure.
Mm.
Do they change how they treat you as you evolve?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Thank you. Not at all. I think for me, that's why it's so important to be so grounded with my family relations and my day ones. Like,
sure.
I'm strict. I don't do... Well, I do new friends, but, you know, I keep my day ones. I still have the same friends since I was 3 years old. You
oh,
know
wow.
What I mean?
Yeah.
I'm that type of person.
Mm.
So for me, my family understands what I do, but
sure.
I've never changed. So why would they treat me differently, you know?
Mm.
So that's my firm grounding, is that I've not changed as a person.
So there's an uncle who thinks now I'm going to score even more money.
Hey, you always have those dangles. My old lady now, when my family starts calling me lady now, I'm like, since when now?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, let's. And they also tease me with it. And they're
sure.
Like, yeah, but it's all coming from a place of love. They're like, no, we're just proud of you, you know?
You know, and I like, whenever we go home to the village, because I know my relatives,
yes.
And I also know which ones are maybe worthy of a 200 buck
got
note.
Got you.
I literally put 50s in my left pocket, hundreds on my right.
Oh, no, you've got a whole strategy.
And
for
200s
this.
At the back.
Wow.
So, depending on which relative says, I need cigarettes or I need to buy this, I know which pocket to reach into.
We are perpetual when you go home.
Exactly.
Standard, yeah.
So maybe look at doing that. You know, rock rock dresses with pockets.
Can you just not give them ideas? They're going to listen to this. We don't need that, okay?
Yeah.
I want my December to be okay and relaxed and chilled. So, yeah.
Girls' school.
Yes.
That's where you started in East London.
No.
Port Elizabeth. In Port Elizabeth, at GQ.
Yes.
Would you send your daughter to a girls' school?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And my son to a boys' school. You know what? For me, what's important is it teaches young girls to be extremely furnished in just etiquette.
Sure.
Right? Discipline. Even my posture, like I still have like certain things that I think of the old collegiate girls, what they taught me.
Oh, yes.
You know, you stand back for people who are grades higher than you. You do this. Like, it's just the etiquette and the courtesy and the sense of discipline and manners and respect is so entrenched. Obviously, grooming is at the forefront of it all. But also, you're not distracted by boys in the classroom. So there's a healthy competition of just grades.
It's us.
Yes. You know what I mean? It's not cool to flunk a subject.
Yes.
It's cool to get straight A's.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's also a sense of tradition that all girls' schools and all boys' schools instill, you know, and that I really still enjoy, you know. So obviously there's the downside of it. But unfortunately for me, I was exposed to boys, I think from, you know, preschool up until grade four. So they weren't foreign to me. And I could see that, okay, as soon as I entered the girls' school in grade five, my classmates were a bit like boy crazy. Hey, it's like, okay, guys, but like, it's just a dude. What's happening?
Yeah,
why is everyone screaming and just look out the window because the grade boys are outside?
I remember when I was starting my breakfast show at 5 FM, we did a whole, I literally went to every city just to introduce the breakfast show.
Yes.
So we were on the street, we were going to schools. We went to your alma mater.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're right. The minute a guy is at a girl's school.
Yeah.
I've never heard screaming like that in my entire life.
Yeah. It's a bit disturbing, right?
It's I'm still deaf from it.
You see.
My ears still ringing.
But I'm sure you felt amazing, though. You were like, oh, yeah, it's screaming for me. Let's go.
But it's also children, so you contextualize it.
Okay, yes, you know in that sense. Yes, 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 obviously. Yeah.
So when you look at how you relate to boys or you started relating to boys, did you ever look back and say, maybe I shouldn't have gone to girls' school? Or was it all butter throughout?
No, so as I mentioned, I did get exposed in a co-ed. I went to a private Christian school before and until grade four. So I did have, and that's what I would do with my daughter as well.
Oh, yes.
Make sure in preschool when you're relating to other people and you're now starting to share and play and have social skills, put them in co-ed.
Oh, yes.
In like from maybe primary school, like let's say grade five or grade six, when things are starting to get grade serious, I would say all girls school. So no, I do believe you need to expose kids. I was exposed to co-ed, you know. I don't know if I would have turned out differently.
Girl bullying can be nasty though. Did you have to deal with girl bullying?
Funny enough, the bullying I did experience was estratweni in the hood.
Sure.
You know, and I speak so openly about this because it's something that I'm so cognizant of. It's part of my mandate as well. Like I'm a proud like advocate of dark skin magic. You know what I mean? And I was bullied estratweni when I'd go home, like in the streets where you're now playing, you know, with everyone else. It was about my complexion.
And you're not even that dark.
Not at school.
You're not even that dark.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with being that dark. I wish I was darker.
No, but what I'm saying, though, is your level, your complexion, I don't think is at a level where, like, why would you bully someone that doesn't,
I get you. It's not far off.
I think you're in between, like, light-skinned and dark-skinned.
Okay. Okay.
But anyway, well, carry on, you were saying.
Yeah, so the bullying actually wasn't stemmed. I don't really remember being bullied when I was in the all-girls school. In fact, I felt a more of a sense of belonging than anything else, you know. I felt even more free, you know, as far as just choices of what I wanted to involve myself in extramural activities, you know, the friendships. Yes, there were cliques, but cliques happen everywhere. But I'm also just that bubbly young girl who just fits in everywhere. I'm friends with, like, the nerds. I'm friends with the cool kids. I'm friends with, like, the goths. I'm friends. You know what I mean? Like, yes. I just, yeah. So, nah.
You're around the way, girl. Mm. Absolutely. So, you go to Cape Town,
mm-hmm.
and you become this kick-ass, I'm on a kick-ass in business, in yeah. corporate kind of
yeah.
woman.
Yeah.
Why should everyone go into corporate before becoming an actor?
Oh, that is, I wouldn't say they have to go into corporate.
But what are the benefits?
But they definitely need to have some business skills.
Yeah.
And again, something I advocate for. I did a Business of the Arts workshop for She Speaks. And this sure. is something where I'm like, this is a lack with artists.
Mm.
We do not treat ourselves as a business first. Right. Yeah. And you can see that mm. education is lacking in just how strategic you also navigate your career, mm. And how you assess the market. So I'm so grateful I did that. Mm. I've got my honors in business science. So for me, I didn't consider being an actress. This was something that came and bit me.
Mm.
You know, for me, my life was already panned out.
What was that moment where you felt that bite?
I'm going to say, like, the most typical answer. It's a calling. When yeah. you have a calling, you can ignore it as long as possible.
Okay.
But it will force you to respond to mm. it. Right? So I think for me, it was when, after I studied at UCT, I finished my honors. I went into this global software company called Meltwater Group.
Mm.
And I was catalyzed by a friend who's like, yeah, she's my best friend. She was leaving HP. She's like, I'm going to go to Firenze in Italy
mm.
and go to the design school there mm. because she wanted to go to Pratt.
Sure.
And out of nowhere in that call, she says, Nam,
mm.
I know where your heart lies.
Sure.
You're damn good at it. Mm. Go for it.
Mm.
I'm like, hey, what's in you now? You know? And that catalyzed something that I had already known.
Sure.
It was, for me, circumstantial, because once I got into corporate, I no longer had time to do what I loved.
Oh, yes.
And for me, the arts was always a hobby. Mm. From school, it was musicals. At UCT, it was UCT Radio, emceeing the World Cup. So I was always just doing these things, these gigs on the side.
Yes.
And it was a hobby. And mm. I knew it's not something to take seriously as a career.
But you kick ass at it because you're a perfectionist, though.
That is true.
Yeah.
You know, so it was then when I realized that something is lacking in my life.
Sure.
And as much as I'd be in the office until the wee hours of the morning at times, just trying to close deals and, you know, do what I needed to do, I no longer had time to have a radio show on the side or go do this casting or,
yes.
you know what I mean? Mm. And that's when I realized, no, man, I'm not going to change the world by sitting on this desk.
What do you miss about radio? Just looking at your short stint on the radio.
It was so short. So I wouldn't even say it was long enough to, you know, have something substantial. Mm, mm. But I was thinking about this now on my way here and just reflecting on obviously doing this podcast with you. I miss the freedom in just storytelling through your voice.
Oh, yes.
That vocation is an art of itself.
Unscripted storytelling.
Yes. You can just do you.
Yeah.
And then depending on your co-host, it's also just that chemistry you guys also need to rely on, because you have listeners who can't see anything, but they're like, that sounds fun.
You guys call it. You guys call it improv.
Yeah, it's improv. It's improv. But it's hanging out.
Absolutely.
It's hanging out and it's just being you, but also being aware that you need to captivate an audience with your voice through mm. storytelling, through the chemistry you guys have, mm. While still keeping them on the edge of their seat.
Sure.
You know? Mm. I respect radio jockeys.
Now, generally, mm. in most arts industries,
mm.
those that have been there for a while might look down on those that come in through a back door or unconventionally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, you come in from corporate, for mm-hmm. instance. There are other people who are acting, but they're not necessarily from theater.
Got
or
you.
They haven't gone to art school or, mm-hmm. or theater school or, mm. or you know.
So deep back door, Gimnaki, where would you place me?
And may I finish the question first?
Uh-huh.
And I'll be very careful how I answer this. But did you ever feel a need to prove that I mean business here? I might come from corporate, mm. but I mean business and I respect the space I'm in.
Mm.
Did you ever feel you needed to do that?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I think that that shows my professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, I was told that I took it very seriously, too seriously, as compared to my counterparts, where it was just fun vibes. It was, hey, let me see who I can hook up with and do this and do that. And I was just like, okay, because I already came with that insecurity of I didn't study this.
Oh, yes.
I was cognizant of that insecurity, right? So I worked 10 times harder. I looked at it with such an analytical, strategic point of view because that's how my brain was trained.
Okay, so the business scientist showed up.
It showed up. I had notes. I had done this. I had analyzed this, this, that. Yeah. So they were even just like, whoa, you're coming with a different situation altogether. Sure. Now we need to straighten up. You know what I mean? So I was overcompensating on that regard. But it's also not to say I didn't have the level of training. I did, my background was in theater, you know. And for me, it was now trying to understand the art of film and television.
Yeah.
So I learned on the job. I learned through auditions. I would really treat auditions as opportunities to hear what the casting director is doing.
Oh, yes.
And that for me was elements for me to grow.
Mm.
So no, I wouldn't say I didn't feel that. And I wasn't treated that way. If anything, they felt a bit of an intimidation with how I approached it.
Oh, yes, because you were here for business.
Exactly.
This is not a sketch.
No. I left a really comfortable paycheck.
I'm sure you did.
You know what I mean?
Sure you did.
So I had to, and my parents are like, why would you, after 5 years of doing, you know, biz sci? So I had a lot more to prove. I had to make it work.
Absolutely. Yo.
Yeah.
So you get your first role.
Mm-hmm.
And you wake up on the day we're going to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
What's going through your mind? Are you praying? Do you have things, mantras you say to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have people you talk to? Do you have lucky underwear? Like, what was that first day for your first role like for you?
I remember it was actually traffic season 2 with Uponi.
Yeah.
Boni Hena, Boni Mbudli.
Sure.
And I absolutely adore that young lady. And I was in Cape Town, and this was me really just putting like a toe in because I was still in corporate, but I was actually heading up the digital marketing department. I was starting the department at Hot FM.
Sure.
And I'd just come back from my stint in New York. So this was me now saying, okay, I've made this promise to myself to enter the media market, but I'm still kind of corporate because I'm not working in front of, you know. And I thought, okay, I have an opportunity to do both because I had more time in my hands. I was excited. I was nervous. I always pray. It's still something I do till this day with my quiet time. I had, again, done everything that I had known from drama and, you know, theater work where I analyze the character. I do this, the notes, you name it. Like, I came in with the file and, like, you know what I mean? And it was such a small featured role, but it was me just being, this is how I prepare. But it was nerve-wracking. I obviously still needed to know what the set etiquette is like. I was conscious of also not being a theater actor in front of television.
Oh,
so
yes.
Subduing performance.
Just keep it here.
Yes. You know, performing through the eyes. Yeah. So I had such a, and I'm grateful because the cast was so welcoming.
Sure.
Bonnie was the lead and she's so dope. So I'm glad that it was such a safe environment where I wasn't dealing with, you know, really mean people,
with
you know.
And egos.
Yeah, and egos. And people were just really welcoming. Mm. And, you know, there were familiar faces that I knew. And I think also it being in Cape Town helped.
You were home.
Yeah, it was just a more relaxed environment.
But you know what it is also about you? You have a... I'm looking for the right word. You have a presence about you.
Okay.
But you also have a calmness about you.
Okay.
But you also have a, I know why I'm here about you. And I think all of that is probably one of the reasons why it might have been that relaxed on the set.
Gotcha.
Because she's not taking chances. She looks like she's serious. She looks like she knows what the hell she's doing. And often you can tell when people are taking chances. It doesn't take long.
You can smell it.
It doesn't take long to smell their fear or to smell that they feel like they might be found out on this gig.
Yeah.
But you have none of that.
No.
You have none of that. You there's a regalness about you also.
Thank you.
Don't worry, I'll stop throwing compliments at you on stage.
That's fascinating that you've been able to pick that up. You're honestly spot on.
No, no, but like I said, I've been watching you grow. Mm. And that's the one thread I've picked up in your career, mm. that you bring all of that, even the different characters you play. Mm. You're convincing because you are serious about what you do, mm. and you it all comes across.
Mm. Thank you.
How's my analysis 101?
Yeah, I'm blown away. I'm just like, yo, like, have you been hanging out with me? Like,
I'm not saying I'm a stalker, but I've been watching you.
No, you know what? It's actually quite affirming for me. I needed to hear this because it's saying that I've been consistent.
Sure.
It's saying that I am centered.
Mm.
It's saying that I'm forever in alignment.
Sure.
And I'm forever staying true to myself. And those things are critically important for me. So thank you.
No, pleasure.
Thank you.
So you, like you're saying, you're a praying woman.
Mm.
You went to a Christian school.
Mm.
You are born again, if I'm
Absolutely.
Not mistaken.
Yeah.
How does all of that determine the roles that you choose for yourself?
I pray about my roles.
Yeah.
So as much as there's strategicness, I believe in the power of saying no, thank you.
Mm.
You know, which is hard at times because we're independent contractors.
Sure.
You know, but if your why, my why is stronger, my vision is stronger, my strategy is stronger.
Mm.
So if I'm finding that there's no purpose in this role,
sure.
and I know my personality, I know if I pick up a script and I'm already rolling my eyes and I'm uninspired, that's a dangerous place I don't ever want to be in.
Mm.
Because that's going to drop my level of wanting to come to work,
sure.
showing
you're
up.
Settling.
Mike, exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't ever, it's such a dangerous place to be in. When you're no longer inspired, I don't want to ever get comfortable.
Sure.
So if I'm not always challenged or growing or just like I need to, the moment I feel a purpose in a role and I realize that this is bigger than me and I'm just a vessel and I'm using this as a servant, I have this gift, I treat it responsibly, I know that it's going to change people's lives, that's when I'm able to really give an honest performance. Because if I'm not able to translate to who is watching
sure.
and those DMs of saying you healed me through this and people opening up things that you know, that I've touched on, what am I doing then? You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you ever look back at roles you turned down and deep down inside wish maybe you hadn't?
No.
And do we know any of them?
I have disappointments.
Yeah.
But I don't...
As in a role you didn't get?
Yes, of
okay.
course.
Yeah.
Like, we're in the industry of rejection.
Absolutely.
And you got to always get up.
In fact, most of your career is rejection.
Yes.
And people never actually
No, they see the glory.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, you always booked them busy. Say, hey, I'm still mourning King Shaka. That was just, you know, that was like a whole year and a bit. I had a 6-month auditioning process.
Sure.
The last callback they say the test shoot, they fly me out to LA, I meet the execs, like you're this close to a breakthrough.
Oh,
you
wow.
sign a 7-year exclusivity contract, you're like, this is the game changer.
Yes.
You negotiate as if you have it, you start shooting, these things happen, 9 months of a project, and then CBS and Showtime say it's canceled.
Imagine.
Do you understand? And you've now, this has been like a year and a half of your life.
Yeah.
You had a 6-month auditioning process, then you had a 9-month shooting process. You basically made a baby.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that I'm still mourning. I'm still like holding on to King Shaka will still find a new home.
Why did they cancel it?
So Paramount Pictures and Showtime merged. And during their strategic, I guess, meeting where
sure.
they now are saying, okay, what shows do you have? What they dropped quite a few shows. I do believe it's a blessing in disguise. These things do happen for a reason. We'll see what the market decides and who picks it up. But it was just no longer going to align with the current strategy of the partnership, you know. So they dropped quite a few shows. I think it wasn't going to translate with the audience. They have their reasons. I'm not really sitting at Paramount Pictures exec.
Sure.
So that was it. But I don't think there's a role that I have regretted saying no to. Not at all. No.
Let's talk about New York.
Let's talk about New York.
New York lessons.
Ha, there's so many.
Yeah.
Yo, New York lessons. Being ruthless.
Why did you go to New York?
So this was part of my Eat, Pray, Love, my journey of...
Find self.
Yeah.
Yes.
So when I had you know, resigned corporate. I had no plan.
True.
So I sat down and I was like, okay, so what are we going to do?
Mm.
I knew for me, I wanted to get global experience in corporate. Even when I was at Maltwater, I had already said I would like to be moved, work my way into the New York office.
Mm.
And that's what they were doing. You know, they'd train you up and they'd swap you around, you know? Mm. And for me, the reason was New York was the mecca of digital marketing at the time.
Yes.
It still is.
Mm.
And that was for me just that.
Mm.
So it was always earmarked. When I resigned, I was like, okay, let me just go for 2 weeks.
Mm.
And a neighbor who knew about this was like, when are you leaving? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, let me link you up with a friend of mine. You know, he was a television executive there.
Mm.
His name is Ilan Kometz. I will never forget him.
Mm.
So he's like, yeah, he used to work, you know, as a television producer, I'm sure with your broadcasting. So I'm like, hey, I'm not going there for that, you know. But he's like, yeah, just meet for coffee. Sure, you know, maybe he can link you up to some contacts and whatnot.
Mm.
Had coffee with Ilan. That coffee, the nerd I am, went with like my notebook and a pen, you know.
Yes.
And I remember filling out literally 3 pages of A4 of that notebook of just all these contacts he gave me. And he even said, listen, I thought I was going to just chat to you and give you one or two.
Yeah.
But after meeting you, I really just want you to do this.
Mm.
You know.
It's that energy I was telling you about.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, and he just changed the tone. He said, I want you to get, you know, a local SIM, get a 917 code, call up these people. They might shrug you off, name drop me and say, you're a friend of Ilan Kometz. I want a lunch date. Make sure you solidify a lunch date. One of them needs to meet you. After that, you're going to try get in on air, on television. You can do like, I was like, whoa, I'm coming back on Christmas. He's like, no, buy time. Your visa can buy you 6 months. Then you do this. So he planted the seed. And that's exactly what I did.
Yep.
You know, I got there. I was a tourist for the first few days. I got bored. And then I started cold calling, which is a skill I got from Maltwater, you know, as closing deals. That's what we did.
Sure.
Knew how to sell myself.
Mm.
And I solidified a lunch date with David, who was part of Current TV, which is now Al Jazeera.
Sure.
Landed up on Viewpoint Live as a panelist with John Fungelsang, spoke about the future of SA. Nelson Mandela was ill at the time, so we spoke about that. And on my 10th day there was when I got a gig that would buy me time where I can live off.
Yeah.
And that was at the Stand Comedy Club as a host.
Oh, wow.
So it was literally through networking, through friends who introduced me to people, and literally just hustling and making my way through. So that was this crazy story.
First things first.
Yes.
Lesson from that meeting with Ilan. What was your biggest takeaway from meeting Ilan? Apart from take a notepad.
Don't close yourself off.
Yeah.
Because if I wasn't open,
sure,
he wouldn't have been open.
Sure.
And if I had been so set to, no, this is just a 2 week holiday.
Yeah.
And not open to, wait, let me call these people.
Sure.
Let me listen to all these other avenues of, let me buy time. Let me do this. I can, you know, pay rent here, I can work here.
Mm.
If I wasn't open,
he
wouldn't have, you know, given me that boost. So I think always remaining open is definitely a huge lesson that I still take till this day.
And what are you still applying from your New York lessons? Like the vast variety.
Staying true to myself. I actually made that promise to myself.
Mm.
After experiencing that chapter, which was also brutal, which was also hard, which was also extremely, like, inspirational. It was like a drug. It was just amazing. Mm. It was just, man, that city is something else.
I was going to say, it was New York.
But, like, also just, you get a different type of edge when you realize you made it there. You survived. You were able to, you know, really play that game.
Sure.
And it's just, you realize how strong you are as well. You realize aspects of yourself that you never knew you had.
Sure.
But when I came back, I said, I'm going to stay true to myself no matter what. Mm. And that's what changed the trajectory of me then saying, I'm going to pursue a career in the arts. Because survival mode, yeah. I had to rely on my natural skills and my love for the arts. Mm. And I could make it there, and I saw how they received me there. Then I was like, Aike, I see you.
Game over.
Aike.
When was the first time you cried in New York? What are you crying about?
I was homesick.
Yeah.
I was homesick. And I remember I was staying. So when I arrived there, I was staying at my friend's who was hosting me. Mm. I'm on 81st and 1st Upper East Side. I'll never forget. Mm. Eric Fulwiler. I was still very good friends now. He's now moving to he's an American guy. He's opening an office here in Joburg. And then when I made the decision to like change my flight and extend it, I then stayed in Financial District in a loft. It was a house share, a loft share. And I remember they were
so
now
a loft share means what in basic
so
English?
So we have like, it's a loft like this, right? It's an apartment. And everyone has their own different rooms. It's like you have roommates. It's like it's a three bedroom.
Okay.
So
it's like a commune-ish.
Yeah, it's roommates. You got
Okay.
New York is expensive. No one.
It's very expensive. Yeah.
Everyone has roommates until you get married. You actually get married just to share rent.
In fact, I know people that even live in a boarding house just so that they can stay in New York.
No, I believe that. And also the apartments, the lofts in Financial District are really nice. They're spacious. Mm. Otherwise, if you stay like midtown, it's just like you're in a shoebox.
Absolutely.
You know. Mm. So. Very good friend of mine was my roommate. And I remember they were like, okay, well, we're going to move, you know. The lease is up. Yo, Ndwana, I was like, I was on the verge of like homelessness.
Yeah.
Because now I'm subletting, right? Mm. I don't have, you know, the right visa to get like a lease under my name.
Sure.
So it was like, what do I do now? And like my friend who I'd been relying on and there with, who literally got told take care of her. It was that. So I needed, you know, thank God, like the friends I made, they have become family. It was like, no, while you look for a place, like you can stay at my aunt's place, you know, at a nice fancy townhouse in Midtown. I was like, how am I getting all of these really great opportunities? Because I knew that when I knew God is in charge, I was meant to be here. Because literally every single time I'm thinking, you know, shit's going to hit the fan, I'm given like a freaking silver platter, you know, of like, no, house at my aunt is like in the Hamptons, you can have the place yourself. I'm like, hey, this place is gorgeous. And while I was looking for my next stop, and that's when I moved to Brooklyn as well. So I did. I cried and I knew I couldn't go home. I just called my mom and I said, I just need like a little bit more money. I know this is on me, but you know, I know at the end of the day, I'm a lost born. What is she going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to make a plan. So even though it was hard for me to ask for money, because this is a decision I made and I said, I'll make it work. And I got their support. You know, at the end of the day, you know, things did hit the fan and I made that call home. Yeah, that was probably my first time I cried.
When you look at this journey that you've been on, your time in New York, where it feels like things are falling apart, but all of a sudden the good Lord is like, hold my beer. Because I'm a firm believer in often the amount of work you put into anything will carry you until the next thing. And often the next thing is proportionally sized to how much work you put in to the previous thing. I almost believe like you get rewarded for the work you put in.
Absolutely.
Do you look at your career and feel like I'm the poster child for that? That every bit of effort I've put in might have only shown up as a result 5 years later. But I know it's because I did that then that I'm here now.
I wouldn't say I'm the poster child of it. I think that's a big statement to uphold. But I do see God's hand on my life.
Sure.
It is so evident.
Sure.
But I also know that faith comes with action, right? Mm, it's not passive.
You can't pray and just wait.
You know, and one thing I do is that. I have judged myself as of late, where I'm like, girl, what happened to that feisty one who would just go get her and not listen to someone to, you know, say, what? no, it's not the right time now. I never listened to that.
Well, have you become measured lately?
Listen.
What's going on?
I don't know. I just had like a self-reflective moment
the
other day.
Could the real Nambita please stand up? What's going on here?
I did. I spoke to myself. I'm like, nah, since when, you know, now it's time to take your future in your own hands. You
Absolutely.
Know, it's going to be on your terms.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I've done that. I think I'm more cognizant of, I'm at peace when things don't work out because I know it's for a reason.
Mm.
And that reason is going to come on later.
Sure.
So I just have a bit more peace. Mm. I'm not necessarily now like forcing things. Yep. I rather let things happen.
Absolutely.
And that just comes with wisdom. You know, if you make the wrong choices and it's not from God, that's when things are, they become problematic and there's no peace in it anymore. And I've seen that. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
But yeah, I've seen that what I've sowed,
sure.
I reap later. Mm, absolutely.
Mm. Let's talk about Linda Bengu.
Yeah.
You are one of the reasons I started watching Savage Beauty.
I love it.
And
thank you.
You kick ass, dude. Like you kick a lot of ass. But I think for me, Savage Beauty is bigger than just what the storyline is, because especially African women, it's almost like you guys are held to a different standard.
Absolutely.
There are things that, for instance, your white counterparts can get away with, but when as a black woman, it's like, why is she doing that? Or who does she think she is? It's like, why would she do that?
The audacity
to show her belly button. It gets that petty. That why are we seeing your belly button? You're 40. It's like, at what age should I hide my belly button?
Yeah.
How have you had to deal with those double standards as an actress, as a black woman, and also as a woman who was in corporate? Because that shit follows you everywhere.
What have you noticed?
About you?
Yeah, in the sense that you've watched Savage, you've obviously seen that there's a standard for black women and African women.
Yeah.
What have you noticed? I want to know where that stems from before I answer it.
Just in terms of what I see people commenting on social media, especially on social media, where you guys can't even break a smile if you've lost a partner. It's like, why is she smiling? Her husband died last week. It's like, you guys are under a microscope all the time.
So, look. There's the truthful answer, and then there's the vulnerable answer.
Yeah.
Right? The truthful answer is you can't listen to the noise.
Yeah.
And we remind ourselves that, and we're very close with that cast.
Sure.
Like, we are a bit codependent. It's actually unhealthy. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm that person. Get team building, guys. Debana nini, whenever you know. And our Duke, I call him the Duke, Udon, Udumisani, is always like giving us pep talks before it comes out because we're all nervous.
Yeah,
we're all like, I hate not being in control. So for season one, we got to watch it before it came out. Text.
Yeah.
Now we watched it with everyone. So I literally was like, I'm not going to be on social media. I'm going to switch that off because you're watching this for the first time. You don't know what made it on. You don't know it's been a year later. So you need to come to terms with yourself. You also are criticizing yourself. I need to watch a show at least twice or three times to enjoy it. The first time I'm criticizing. The second time I'm enjoying it. The third time I'm like noticing things and watching everything else that I didn't, and now I'm in awe. So you can't, when you're in that very vulnerable place, because we're the worst critics of ourselves, and you can really nitpick yourself to the pulpit. And actors, actually artists, are deeply insecure. We use that insecurity to create the art and magic, and to also analyze a human being.
Or to escape from yourself.
Right? So if you're now gonna have that very vulnerable, insecure moment, and then also go on Twitter while you're in that fragile state and then listen to that, you are not going to be able to even get up. You're not going to be even able to make it onto the next set. So I guard myself from that. And I think also that's where my faith comes in, and my family and friends know who you are. Know your identity. Have that affirmation. I know my identity in Christ. I know Onako. I'm affirmed at home. I'm affirmed with my day ones who've known me even before this. This is just a job. You know what I mean? Yes, there's criticism, but take it back to the art. And Dumisani literally gave us this pep talk before it came out. Don't care about what anyone else says. Remember the magic. Remember how hard we worked. Remember that we literally seen you seal and we left our hearts on that floor. And the production company took us out for dinner saying, guys, you guys killed it. Like, we were so affirmed way before the show came out. And we remember the magic we created. So that should be enough.
I remember partying with you guys at Rockets.
Oh, yes.
I think, was that the night of the premiere?
That was the night of the premiere.
Yeah, and I remember partying with you guys. But you guys looked comfortable. So I guess you knew that, okay, it's not that bad then.
No, but you know what? We were celebrating.
Yeah.
We were celebrating because, yes, we had only watched episode one.
Yeah.
We still also don't know what's to come. We don't know how it looks. But we were celebrating because, damn, we worked hard.
Sure.
We really poured ourselves into that show. So it was also just a reunion as well, you know? So, yeah.
Are you happy with the outcome?
I am.
Yeah. I am.
And I'm not really focusing on the outcome. I'm happy with our performances. Absolutely. I'm in awe. I'm fans of the cast.
It looks amazing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, you guys did kill it.
I know, shame. I believe so, yeah.
Let's talk about Impini, because you're busy with that right
now. Yeah, I just came from that. I'm going back to that, so.
And like you said earlier, you're playing a dark character. Yes, you need to get into character, but how taxing is it when it's a dark character?
It's extremely taxing.
Where you might have to dig deeper than you've personally even have ever had to go yourself.
Look, there's a reason I'm wearing a wig, for example, today.
Yeah.
These are things that take me out. Sure. Like, I'm a very sensory actor. I have a playlist. I have certain songs. I'm always in my earphones that take me back. Even with Savage Beauty, I have a whole soundtrack for Linda and Tando's romance. I just put on a song and it takes me back. You know, I even know what like Undo Niu's perfume would be or this. Like, I literally, so that by the time I'm in it, it's almost like stepping back into those shoes.
Oh, yes.
My body language starts to change. Everything starts to change. So even while talking to you, there are little outbursts of like Ndoni that come out. But I told you, you're going to give me like, you know, I'm 80% Nambita now.
Yeah.
Because you don't just break. I didn't have time to de-roll, you know. But just having this wig and like nails, it's just at least being in my own clothes helps me get back into myself. But I take de-rolling quite seriously because it can get quite dangerous.
Sure.
You don't want to take that back home. You also don't want to take that trauma into your own life. I think when I had to learn the art of de-rolling was when I played a paranoid schizophrenic role on The Queen of Shakisha. That was hectic. And I remember the director would check up on me and be like, how did you sleep? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I sleep fine. It's like, well, he had nightmares because he keeps watching all my takes. And when I'm like, when I wasn't taking the medication and having those dark moments, he has flashbacks of that because he's watching every single time. Whereas for me, I'm living it. But then as soon as I get into my car and I take that hour out,
it's goodbye. You
wash them off, you know. So I'm fine now, but I'm big on boundaries, just generally in life, even more so because of what I do. Yeah.
Are you in a relationship?
By any chance? I am.
And how does de-rolling or not de-rolling enough affect relationship dynamics?
It hasn't.
Yeah.
I think because I'm so big on boundaries, I explain it to my partner. Yeah. I explain it to my family. I explain it to my friends. They know. They know. I put my phone on do not disturb when I'm in script mode. I tend to not speak to anyone. I just isolate. And I just take that time. So you won't get that. Because if you call me, I might respond to you you know, like maybe a bit because I'm here.
Mm.
So I just usually just isolate myself. Even on set, I just isolate. Mm. I just find a little corner and keep to myself. And I just put my earphones on because I am a method actor.
Sure.
And you also don't want your crew to take things the wrong way. But hey, so ngundoni manje kwenzekani. Hey, she was so sharp with me. She was so, you know,
exactly.
You don't want that. Yeah. You know, it's also just for the people you work with to also understand that we all have our different processes.
Absolutely.
Because I'm such a bubbly person, they know when the switch has happened and it's like, ah, no, she's just, you know. So that's how I do it. But in my relationship, it is like literally like I'll be offline during this time. You know what I mean? I'll break out at this time. Yeah.
So given the person that you are, that I described earlier on, would you say you're easy or difficult to date?
Judging from what my partner says, I'm a pleasure to date.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've had to grow.
Yeah.
I've had to grow, I've had to unlearn, I've had to heal, I've had to deprogram. And because I'm already quite self-aware, it helps because I'm already foreseeing something. So I'm letting you know.
Yeah.
I might sound off or I might be very busy in the next 2 days because my schedule is like this.
Mm.
So don't take it. And then I'll also make sure I feed your love language and affirm you enough.
Oh, yes.
Do you get what I'm saying? And every single break that I have, I'll send a little da-da-da-da.
You still you know do what you need to get done.
Absolutely. No, I need to be present in all roles in my life, you know?
Mm.
You can't. I'm still a daughter. Mm. I'm still a sister. You know, I need to still fulfill all those roles. And that's why I say to you, I still have those friends since I was three. Because I hold those relationships to such a high regard.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. What roles can we look forward to still?
Honey, we're going international.
I can believe that.
That's where we are. I'm producing a lot more now.
Yeah.
I'm stepping into that. And it is daunting. It is exciting. It's always been the plan.
Yeah.
But for me, you know, MBNE was a manifestation. I've been wanting an action. I did a feature film with Across Palants last year.
Yeah.
That was my first action. And then I knew I needed to delve into this.
Sure.
And it came at the right time. It was that thing of you've been preparing.
Sure.
And then now it's like, oh, this is why.
Hence I say that we think the hard work we do here, when we're done, we're done.
No.
But often it's a year, 2, 5, 10 years later that you realize that, oh, I see you now, Prakod.
Mm-hmm.
You were getting me ready for that.
Yes.
So you're there right now.
I'm there right now. I'm excited to really stretch myself beyond measure now.
Yeah.
I'm on a
Didn't you get hurt the other day doing a stunt?
Not the other day. It was the other month in March. It was in March. It was the first stunt. There was no stunt coordinator and their exposure or go send Cooper my files. Ananda. Ananda. There was no stunt coordinator. I was like, how? But we're doing So I say, hey, but this is how accidents happen. And then now it happens. And now it's like, hey. But it's been a lot of the work that I've been doing has been me in pain.
Sure.
You know, I've been on a 6-month rehabilitation for my back.
Mm.
But I'm still strong. I'm still able to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
What I love, though, is, you know, with Showmax, there's been a lot of support from clients.
Sure.
You know, obviously, since that happened, now I think everyone's lessons was learned. It's like safety on set is the utmost priority.
Absolutely.
So, you know, even just with the stunt guys, the team that I've worked with, you know, they've been on set, you know, they've considered, you know, working with guys that I'm comfortable with, that I fought with, that I know. So it's actually been now a pleasure. It did get me down mentally, emotionally down, it got me down. Just even not being able to walk. I mean, I was bedridden for a whole week and certain things that you do at gym, you're now not able to, and not being able to do your own stunts, which is what I signed up for.
Mm.
It was a proper challenge.
Sure.
yeah, I had to kind of just ask God, why now? Like, we just started. I just gained momentum and then this happens right at the beginning.
I just got here.
I just arrived. You know, but I grew in resilience in different ways through that. I learned a lot.
So you grew either way?
I grew, man. I saw the purpose in it now. And now I'm back, you know, with Henry fighting, doing Muay Thai. I'm excited, yeah.
The international role you just alluded to now, when do we get to see you?
Well, I'm not saying anything. There's nothing. I'm just saying those are the roles I am now venturing off into.
That's where we can
so
look
that
for
I'm
you.
Not in trouble. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, to 2021, I got headhunted by an agency called Range Media.
Oh, yes, yes.
So it was, it's UK and US representation. It's basically CAA and William Morris who merged together to find like they to represent their top talent around the world, and it's been great. So it's been a lot of building that on the forefront, but also it's it takes me to also make a move, you know, and being ready for that move.
Absolutely.
So that's where we are. I think also Essence was at the cusp of that as well. That just also came out of nowhere, you know. Essence landed on my lap.
Yeah,
I just put it out there at the beginning of the year as a prayer. And then God was like, bet, I got you, girl.
Sure.
So it's now I'm cognizant of certain changes that I need to make in order to fully actualize that move. And yeah.
What are you most grateful for this week? As we try and wrap up, because we're being shouted at.
I'm grateful for a fresh start.
Yeah.
We just had a production break for Mbini, and this is our first week back. I'm grateful for that. It's such a phenomenal show, and I'm grateful that it's doing so well for Showmax. I'm grateful to be back with the crew and the cast. I've missed them, like even this week, like kumnandi man, you know, and we're creating magic. I'm really grateful for that fresh start. I think that is at the top of my this week's list. And I'm grateful for the heights that God has taken me to. I'm literally just fresh off being in a dream city of New Orleans as a Nina Simone obsessed jazz lover.
The Big Easy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm grateful to have been afforded that opportunity and to host in that magnitude, you know, and be a part of being a voice for this diaspora.
Absolutely.
And the only one there being that voice, you know, and being able to meet different producers and artists and industry players and be at the forefront of Black excellence on a global scale. That was so inspiring.
Would you say your time in New York low-key prepared you for what you had to be doing in New Orleans, for instance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know what it is? Someone tweeted it.
Yeah.
It was the announcement went out and someone was like, oh, well, she spent time in New York, so she won't be intimidated by that crowd. She knows it.
Yeah.
And I didn't consider that.
Yeah.
But I think if I had zero experience with the American crowd and realizing how talented and a force us South Africans are, when I was there, I was like, talented.
Exactly.
We have an edge like no other.
Yeah.
And because we are so diverse and because we are so locked into the world. And that's why for me, I can see why Trevor Noah blew up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Take an American in his shoes who's going to completely cross over and still master that industry and and then some. You know? It's because we're so also internationally woke.
Our worldview is not.
It's not here.
Yeah.
We're here.
Absolutely.
And we're extremely diverse as well. And also South Africans have an edge.
We're just
special, man, you know? So not also being affirmed in your own magic and knowing that they ain't seen nothing. I'm going to bring who we are.
Because I will always bring something you've never seen.
Absolutely. And being so confident and assured in that.
Sure.
You know? I wish more South Africans were like that.
In fact, I wish every African would understand that your Africanness is a superpower that you need to tap into more. Don't dilute it. You must actually find a way of crystallizing it.
And let it lead you.
Let the crystal form, the crystalline form, is a crystalline crystallized form.
Crystallization.
Of your Africanness.
Yeah.
Let them smoke that. Don't dilute yourself. Mm. We get there, we dilute ourselves. Mm. How? We start with the accent. All of a sudden, you're twanging.
Kariega, that's a different conversation now.
We will have the conversation another time when we have time.
Yeah, that's good.
But for now, just wanted to thank you for being this inspiring powerhouse that you are, dude.
Thank you.
Inspired.
Ow.
And I don't get inspired easily.
Oh, wow.
I'm very inspired by your work ethic, by your... You can tell when a person has prepared for a role. Mm. I've never looked at any character that you've played and felt like, she could have done a bit more.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And not many people master that. So sure. shout out to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think I needed this more than you did. Whew, I needed these affirmations.
No, I...
Thank you.
I can pick these things
up. Cause, yeah,
the good Lord was like, interview that one next.
Thank you.
Nambita, thank you. And keep flying, dude. I don't think the world has seen anything yet.
I agree.
I think you're still warming up. You're still, you're still gathering bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to seeing the castle that you're building. And yeah.
I'm excited.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nambita is about to leave the building. You'll see her on a screen somewhere. At some stage, you'll be on every screen anyway.
Amen.
So we look forward to that. People must say, yeah, but why is she getting all the gigs? Because she kicks ass at all the gigs.
That's what's up.
Try it. And we are done with another week of Wow, What a Week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Thank you for sharing the links. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for all of your subscriptions. We'll be doing this again next week. But most importantly, a shout out and thank you to all of our guests. Coming to you from downtown Johannesburg, we're at Amped Studios, part of the Africa Podcast Network. Get in touch by emailing waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Please also feel free to get in touch with our videographer, our cinematographer, Trevor at Pezulu Works, and get in touch with our imaging specialist. His name is Otis the Flo Fraser. He can do imaging for your radio show, for your mixes, and for all of your podcasts. Shout out to all of our contributors on the show, today's show contributors, including Tabiso Sikwane and Keletso Modisakeng. Keletso Modisakeng, also our executive producer. Till next week, have a wow week. In spite of yourselves.